I'm David.
And I'm Matt.
And you're listening to the Mastering Mondays podcast.
Here, we dive into the world of Microsoft and explore how it can help you, whether you're a business, an education provider, or an individual trying to make the most of the suite of Microsoft apps available.
Want to improve efficiency, boost profitability, master Microsoft's product range, or simply learn from some of the most valuable Microsoft experts who are sharing their stories with us? Then you're in the right place.
Welcome to the Mastering Mondays podcast, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays.
Welcome to the Mastering Mondays podcast, brought to you by No More Bad Mondays. Today, we're delighted to welcome Peter Rising to the podcast. Peter is a 4-times Microsoft MVP YouTuber, currently senior lead in cybersecurity at Insight, and has just been voted winner of the Security and Compliance Evangelist Award at the Microsoft Community UK Spotlight and Recognition Awards. So no need to guess what we're going to talk to Peter about. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, David and Matt. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Congratulations again on the award. I guess to start off with, I'm really curious about how you've ended up where you are now. So obviously, like David said there, you're a Microsoft MVP, you have a YouTube channel, you've just won an award. How did that all start?
Quite accidentally in many ways, because I have a son who's now 14 years old and he has severe autism. And when we learned of his disability when he was very young, at the age of 2, we made the decision that my wife would give up working and become a full-time carer for him, which he has done wonderfully well, absolutely brilliant. So the best decision we ever made. But what that also meant was I, up until that point in my career, I'd already been working a long time. I'm 52 right now, so I've been working since 1988, is that up until that point, I was very happy coasting along. I never really had any real ambition. I was happy being just coasting along and not really wanting to be the big boss or get promoted or anything like that. But needs must. I had to sort of improve my lot because of financial constraints, one salary family. And slowly but surely, I started sticking in a bit more, doing some Microsoft exams. And I was very fortunate because that was the catalyst, taking that first exam in not that long ago, really. We're talking sort of 8 to 10 years ago tops, quite late in my career, that I got a taste for ambition. It sort of, I took that exam, I passed, a switch flicked in me, and boom, before you know it, I'm getting asked to write a book by a publisher on that exam, which I did, and I started dipping into forums on Microsoft and answering questions. That led to getting nominated for MVP, and the more this happened, the more things just seemed to keep on rolling. I got promoted up from senior consultant to principal consultant and started getting leadership roles. And fast forwarding a bit to today, where I work for the wonderful global organization Insight, who are really, really a great place to work, one of the top 20 companies to work for in the world in 2023 last year. And I'm now a senior practice lead for cybersecurity and across EMEA for that organization. So I have to pinch myself sometimes, I really do, that this unexpected accidental journey I've been on over the last 8 or so years, because it was never something I really wanted, never something I expected, but I'm grateful for the ride, and I've had some great experiences because of it.
Do you in any way wonder what would have happened had you taken that step earlier, or does it not really kind of, you know, figure? Just pleased with where you are now?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't really think about it for the most part. I never sort of think, oh, I could have been further along. Actually, that's not entirely true, because we did have to make certain compromises in our living standards along the way when I wasn't as in as good a job as I've managed to get to. And I often wonder, had I stuck in a bit earlier and had that ambition, maybe we might have a bigger, nicer house somewhere. But, you know, it's comparison is the thief of joy, my wife always says, and always try and be grateful for what we've got now rather than what we could have had if I'd done this or that in a sliding doors, parallel universe moment.
So let's talk a bit about your expertise then. So So we've enforced two-factor authentication. We've disabled the accounts of our old employees. Security is done, right? You know, is there really anything else to it, or is, you know, what are we missing?
Oh, well, I'm so glad that you've enabled two-factor authentication, because there are so many organizations that I talk to who still haven't done even that. It's scary. Big name organizations. I'm obviously not going to name drop anyone because I don't want to get into trouble, but it's scary just how many of these large organizations in the public and private sector still haven't done those basics. But there's so much to security, and once you've started taking the steps to improve your security posture, that's not it. A lot of organizations also think, well, okay, we've done that now, we're finished with it, we don't have to think about that anymore. But it's an ongoing, ever-changing landscape. The malicious actors who are out there, the bad guys, they are adapting their techniques all the time. They're using modern technologies like AI to get into your environments, to penetrate your defenses, your identities. And it often comes down to, as well, the fact that many customers that I've dealt with don't appreciate that security is multifaceted. So if you think of cybersecurity as a top-level term, underneath that you've got compliance, identity, management, privacy, and it's all in the little subcategories. And if you translate that into the Microsoft world, where I am very, very firmly camped, then you can talk about products like Defender for, well, pretty much everything: endpoint, identity, Internet of Things, you name it. We've got identity under the Entra banner, formerly known as Azure AD, now Entra ID, and compliance under Microsoft Purview. And we've got things like Intune for devices and Priva for privacy. So quite often you'll get customers coming to you saying, we want to roll out Microsoft Purview for all our data protection. Well, that's fine and dandy, brilliant. We're happy to help you, but step back a little bit. Look at this holistically, that helicopter view. Have you done all of the other stuff to have that defense in depth? Like, start with your identities, because that's what's going to be penetrated first. That's what the bad guys are going to go after. If they get past that, then they can get at your data and they can compromise things and look for elevation of privilege and lateral movement and that sort of thing. So multifaceted and always changing.
That's really interesting. You know, that idea that, you know, there is a way to approach your security, and it isn't just kind of look at the headline product that you might associate as being relating to security, but you have to work through the stages to get to where you need to get to.
Without naming an organization, obviously, has anybody got this 100% right? Like, is there anyone that you've worked with right now, you're going, do you know what? They've ticked every single box to ensure that they're safe, and your job's done, and you know they got nothing to worry about. Is there anyone in that position, or is that like unachievable?
I think, in my experience, and I'd be happy to be corrected by any of my peers if they happen to be listening to this, but I think that's unachievable. I've never come across anybody who's been perfect, and it's that's usually quite evidential. If you're familiar with Microsoft security and compliance products, as an example, you can get into things like your Secure Score or your Compliance Manager Score, and they usually hover from anywhere between sort of the late 60% to, I think the top one I've ever seen is in the late 70s. I don't think I've ever seen one over 80%. So I think it's one of those things that you can attack from getting the biggest and quickest wins from percentage score. But you shouldn't be too focused on perfection, because you'll just drive yourself crazy trying to achieve it and then maintain it. So no, is the simple answer. I really don't know if that's possible.
I guess in certain respects, it might be that, you know, to achieve that, that those higher scores might have other impacts on the business as well. And so it's a kind of a judgment as to how far you take it.
Yeah, that's a very good point, David, actually. And sometimes if you get too secure, then that can have a detrimental effect. I mean, one of the national health organizations that I worked with, they had to be very considered in their approach to implementing security technologies, because they've got critical patient care to think of, and this had to be very carefully planned and rolled out and communicated, because we can't have patients at risk because of technology that's getting in the way. So very, very valid point there, David, indeed.
The trouble is, all I've heard there is that there's a chance for me to be the first one to get to 100.
you can relate the challenge there, Matt. No, that's, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's a good aspiration, but maybe you just want to try out and set yourself up in a little test environment, get yourself an E5 license and see how far you can get with it. Do you know, that might on my own YouTube channel, that might be actually good video fodder. It might be a good idea for me to try and see how far I can actually get. But I would be very nervous at doing that in the real world for the effect that it would have on a genuine user base. It would have to be very, very slowly and carefully measured out and the right admin roles assigned to those tasks, because there's just such a lot to do there to get anywhere near to that.
What's a typical day like as a cybersecurity specialist? So I'm assuming you have sirens and flashing lights going off all around your desk every time something kind of kicks off. What's a typical day like?
Well, that depends what your role is in cybersecurity. I mean, I am sort of less in the technical weeds than I've ever been, because my role now is more a leadership role. I'm a practice lead of a team of, I think there are 24 people reporting directly to me at the moment, and they have various different roles of consultants and architects and engineers who deliver various pieces of work for the clients we work with. On the other hand, we've got analysts in our managed security team, our security operations center, who are looking at alerts coming in and triaging those and dealing with them and all that sort of thing. So it's very, very dependent on the role. From my point of view, as a leader, I'm looking at strategy of everything related to security, what's current, what's emerging, what's very sort of niche and on the horizon. So always thinking of the next thing, but being mindful of getting the right processes and recommendations in place for our clients today for what their needs are. And it's an interesting position to be in as a strategic leader, in that what you're looking at now is quite often tomorrow's world. It's like years away from what businesses are anywhere near ready to put in place. If you get back to the comment I made earlier about a lot of organizations scarily not even having MFA turned on yet. So what should be the basics right now, there are many organizations who are still miles behind that, and they need to get savvy quick, because those bad actors out there are not discriminative. They'll look and probe and try and get into get any advantage they have.
Is there a strong community in terms of the cybersecurity, you know, people working across various different companies in cybersecurity? Because clearly it's a kind of a joint endeavor. You may be working for different companies, but it is a joint endeavor, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. There is various different communities out there where you can engage with other cybersecurity professionals at the various levels. Online in forums, there are, the more senior you get to leadership levels, there are events that you can go to and meet with other people like CISOs and CIOs and that sort of thing. So, but yes, I mean, I think there's always a little bit of, in those organizations who are always going to be competing with each other, a little bit of being on your guard and not want to give away too much of your own secret sauce if you have any sort of competitive advantage like that. But broadly speaking, I found it to be all quite civilized, and people are very supportive of each other, especially in the Microsoft world, which is broadly speaking where we do most of our work. I mean, we are a vendor agnostic solutions integrator at Insight, where I work. So we deal with not just Microsoft. So we try and engage with our clients when they come to us, that first conversation, talking about principles rather than technologies. We will say, what are you doing for your identity and access management, rather than, well, have you turned on conditional access in Entra? We don't necessarily assume it's going to be a Microsoft story. Microsoft have come a long, long way in the world of cybersecurity in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, 10 years, something like that. Because if you had conversations about implementing Microsoft for security those sort of number of years ago, you wouldn't be taken seriously. But now Microsoft are very, very firmly in that top right quadrant corner of Gartner and on Forrester reports, and they're very, very serious about security and want to be widely respected and trusted for that. And they've made great strides in that. So the more established historical cybersecurity players need to be constantly evolving and adapting their own offerings to stay relevant because Microsoft are coming for them. There's no doubt about that.
What are some of the most significant cybersecurity threats you've encountered whilst working with Microsoft 365?
Do you know, it all comes down to the human factor as much as anything. It always comes down to that human experience with technology in terms of something getting in, something causing disruption. So it's like phishing, that sort of thing is the easiest for a malicious actor to implement, and the easiest for a human being to make the mistake of falling for. So that human element is the part that is probably the most prevalent and equally the least considered, not just within the realms of technology itself, but if you think of physical security as well. I mean, a lot of us work hybrid now, or work from home, but we've got offices still with key card entry to doors. So you got things like shoulder surfing. And, you know, if you visit a building, an office building, which has got lots of businesses in it and it has a key card entry, it's, if you put your mind to it, it doesn't take much effort to just surf in a door behind someone. I mean, I actually did that the other day in our own office building down in down near London. And it's a building with lots of businesses in it. You have to press a buzzer to get in if you're not a regular visitor there and you don't can beep yourself in. And somebody pressed the buzzer to get in and talk to security, and I just surfed behind him and then I went. So you see a lot of examples in the news of organizations who've been hit, and you had the CrowdStrike breach that happened recently, and it's all too easy to pile onto organizations like that when they suffer a breach like that. I actually felt a bit sorry for them in a way, because it could have been anyone, you know. Nobody's perfect, and it's unfortunately a sad fact of life that it's only a matter of time that something like that happens again to somebody equally as big in the industry. It's a matter of when, not if.
You mentioned about how serious Microsoft is around security, particularly in recent years. How does Microsoft 365 enhance security for organizations? And what features do you find the most effective? So we've mentioned two-factor authentication, but and that's obviously a must, really. But what else is effective that people could be doing right now, particularly, I'm thinking, small to medium businesses and education providers?
Yeah, good question. And I think after you've done those basics, if you've got those basic right of getting a strong identity in place with two-factor authentication, then you can expand on that with things like Entra conditional access, which MFA is the most basic form of conditional access, really. It's a principle of if this happens, then do that. And you can do all sorts of additional permutations of policies with conditional access, so based on location and that sort of thing. But other than the identity side of things, I would go next to your data security. That is one area that has been very, very difficult to get organizations to take seriously in recent years, up until the advent of AI and things like Copilot and ChatGPT. The advent of these technologies with large language models has opened the eyes of organizations to the importance of data security. So it's made it very much easier for the likes of me to go into customers and talk about, where's your data? Where is it? Is it on premises? Is it here? Is it there? How is it protected? Have you got Microsoft Purview deployed? And Microsoft Purview is the compliance protection software that's available to speak to that. And the three core elements of that are sensitivity labeling, which will protect your files and emails and meetings and all sorts of different things with encryption and content marking and headers, footers, that sort of thing, and who can access the document, no matter where it is shared. So that is a really, really crucial part of protecting your data, and one that is needs some planning and preparation and communication, obviously, because users need to be educated and informed on when this is coming, why this is coming, and how to use it. but it really is something that most organizations with Office 365 licenses will have in some way, shape, or form. The second key component of it is data loss prevention, or DLP, where policies are created to detect sensitive information types in emails and documents, for example, credit card numbers, national insurance numbers, medical, financial information. And if that happens, it will trigger a policy, which will then give the user some guidance in a policy tip of how they can or cannot proceed. They can either override that and accept it as a risk, or it can be blocked altogether. And then finally, retention and disposal of data as well. Retention policies, retention labels. This is one of the things that a lot of organizations do get quite badly wrong at times, in that they will be aware that they have to consider this, but they'll just say, well, we'll just protect ourselves by retaining everything forever. And then that's the worst thing you can do, because there are deleting that data in a timely fashion, disposing of it is just as important as how long you retain it for. So there are many, many regulatory standards in place, GDPR being an obvious one, and there's all sorts of standards like NIS2 coming in the European Union, and DORA coming in next year. So as an organization, you have to be responsible about privacy of data and how it's secured and protected, because there are some very, very real penalties to organizations now for data leakage and getting that wrong. You can have substantial fines, and even at C-level suite in extreme cases, you could be even talking jail time. So very important to get it right. And Microsoft Purview can definitely speak to that.
It's interesting that you say that, you know, companies don't necessarily kind of think about the full picture, just because, you know, a lot of them will say, for example, well, we absolutely insist on a European data center, as if, you know, and yet this is probably one of the least significant risks at all. If your data's in the States, you know, what, that we're going to go to war with the States and they're going to trash our, you know, the risk is that some bad actor's going to get a hold of it. It really is, isn't it? And yet, you know, that seems to be something that people kind of say, check, you know, that's fine. You know, we don't worry about the safe harbor. We actually want it to be geographically located in the EU. Now we're okay. Weird.
Yeah, exactly. And there are very good and compelling reasons for why sometimes organizations need particular geolocated data, but quite often not the right reasons as you've just described. But yeah, it's education on cyber is getting a lot better, and it's also being taught from a very early age now in technology, and certainly in college, where my oldest son is at the minute, and going into university. I think that we didn't even have computers when I was still at school. I'm that old, but now coming through, that knowledge is much more ingrained into the generation that's coming up now. And I have members of my team. I'm fortunate. I have a very diverse team in my practice, all around Europe, from all different backgrounds, genders, ethnicities, and ages. And this young next generational talent that's coming through is so switched on and hungry for success. And it's really inspiring to see how focused they are and how informed and educated and savvy they are. And I learn just as much as them sometimes as hopefully they can get from me as a mentor and a leader. So it's just really, really cool to see that, and gives you a lot of hope for what's to come with an ever-changing world of technology as AI grows and all that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Earlier on, you mentioned that the job's never done. That, you know, in terms of securing your data, securing your organization, the job is never done. How should small SMBs, small medium businesses, and other smaller organizations stay updated on the latest cybersecurity trends and threats, you know, particularly those relevant to Microsoft 365, because this may fall to somebody who isn't a full-time, even a full-time technical person. They may just have got the short straw and they're setting up new users and stuff. What's the best approach for those people?
It's a big challenge for those smaller businesses where the person who gets nominated to be the IT person, that isn't necessarily their full-time job. They're not even an IT person, let alone a cybersecurity person. So it's in that situation, and ultimately it always comes down to budget and money. It's a very, very harsh fact, but when it comes to security of your business, in my view, it might sound a little cold and callous, but there should always be a way to find the money to at least protect yourself to a decent standard. It's like, what does good look like? And try and get to the minimum of good, not necessarily better or best. So you can try and stay as informed as you can yourself. Try and find alliances with other local small businesses, or not necessarily local, online even. And talk to other similar businesses about what they're doing. I mean, quite often there's that competitive nature, but equally there's a community that can be dug into there and that sort of experience. But online forums, there's always ways to find. I mean, heck, we've got Copilot, we've got ChatGTP now. Not that you should ever entirely trust everything you put into these large language models, but they can get you started sometimes on the right path to the information that you're seeking. But if you can at all justify it financially, and it's a big if, I know, you should look to get professional support, professional consultancy from an organization, a solutions provider or a solutions integrator such as Insight. I mean, we work with big enterprises, but we also work with a lot of SMC, small to medium corporates as well. So there are options, and you can, in that situation as well, potentially, depending on the Microsoft licensing that you've got, qualify for funding from Microsoft as well. There's all sorts of funding options for free workshops provided by Microsoft that people like Insight can deliver. So there's always ways. And if you're a charity, I mean, there's charitable licensing. And there's always people who, I've been known to do this myself, who are, if you get any spare time, who are willing to give back a little bit to organizations who are sort of a charity or that sort of thing, or education, just because it's good to pay things back a little bit and help out where you can. So never think that there's nothing you can do. There's always a way.
What is your favorite Microsoft application or product? You can't say anything to do with security. So is it something as simple as like Planner, OneNote, Loop, or maybe you enjoy using Power Apps? Is there something like in Microsoft that you kind of keep going back to?
The one that I'm enjoying the most, it changes depending on the moment in time. But the one I'm enjoying the most right now, I would say, is absolutely by a mile my favorite, is one you just mentioned, which is Loop. I love Loop so, so much. I do it for meeting agendas. I do it for collaborative task lists. And with the introduction of Copilot Pages, which I've just been playing around a bit, you can convert your Copilot queries into Loop pages, which you can share, and that can build out into full proposals if you watch the demo that Microsoft did when they launched the technology. So Loop is really my best friend at the minute. It's just so easy to use. People can work on it at the same time, that co-authoring experience, and I just love it. I think it's really, really good product, and one of the best things Microsoft have come out with for quite a while. And it's so simple, really, such a simple concept.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because when we first started the podcast, nobody was mentioning Loop is the answer to that question. But slowly, particularly over the last couple of episodes, actually, Loop has started to come up more and more. And I've definitely seen within education that it's very much like the talking point, and everyone's trying to use it. And we did actually mention in a previous episode a few weeks back about, in some ways, the danger of that as well, where they suddenly want to use Loop for absolutely everything because it's like the hot product at the moment. It's like, can I do everything on Loop? And you mentioned one there yourself, actually, around task management and using Loop for that. Now, I'm a massive Planner fan, but I know, obviously, you can use that as a component within Loop. And actually, with an organization really recently where they were using Loop's kind of like inbuilt sort of like a table, really, isn't it, where you can have these kind of to-do lists. And I was saying, well, why would you use that? Why would you not just use the planner component in there. So you're getting kind of the best of both worlds. And I think in some ways, the answer to that is actually just shows how flexible it is. It's like, well, if you prefer that, do that. If you prefer that, do that. It doesn't actually matter that I believe they should be using that. If the other one works for them, then go ahead. It's brilliant. So yeah, it's a really powerful product. And I'm hoping organizations start to use it more and more.
Completely agree. There's no right or wrong way of doing things within Microsoft. There are so many different options of ways of working that there's going to be something in there that will work for you and your closest colleagues. Because I mean, you've still got OneNote. There's still people who swear by OneNote. I mean, I've not touched the thing since I discovered Loop. Loop's my new favorite. But over the years, there's been all sorts of successes and not so great early adopted products. I mean, we've seen Yammer in various forms over the years evolve into Viva Engage, and you'll get organizations who they swear by that. They use it day to day, and it works for them. Some people who just don't get it, and I've been in both camps. I was a bit of a convert to it. I don't really use it now because my organization doesn't use it, but my previous one did. So yeah, it's just another example of what works for you in the particular situation that you're in. And Microsoft have usually got some sort of answer for you.
Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. I don't know about you, Matt, but I feel way better informed about the whole kind of threat management environment. And I hope our listeners do too, particularly those smaller businesses. Again, thank you for being with us on this episode of Mastering Mondays.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for inviting me, Matt and David. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.